I should begin. By clarifying a point somebody asked a question yesterday after the class. It's not that I was saying yesterday that women shouldn't have nice darshan of the deities and all facilities and so on. My point was just that the material world means genuine hardcore exploitation, because it means sex exploitation. It means sex life, and sex life, illicit sex, means exploitation. And when you disconnect that, then whatever little remnants of lording it over may still carry over are very mild by comparison. That was my point. Otherwise, women should have nice darshan, nice prasadam, nice place to stay, everything nice. Yes?
I only want to ask, where does this quote come from, where women are respected?
I think it's Manu Sangita. I can't say for sure. I've never seen it in Prabhupada's books. One of our Indian devotees quoted that for me. Apparently, it's a very well-known quotation. I'm sure we'll hear it a lot now that it's gotten started. Okay. Today I wanted to bring up different quotations from Srila Prabhupada, a few quotations, and some letters that are interesting. The quotations were selected, with a bias of course, because I've been talking for the last several days about materialistic householder life, the householder life of the Grihamedhis. And one might say, well, that's for the karmis, but once one is in the Krishna consciousness movement, none of these things hold true. And of course, once one is in pure Krishna consciousness, few, if any, of these things do hold true. But there's also some warning indication from Srila Prabhupada that even though one may be an initiated devotee of Krishna, one should be still very careful about these dangers. So there are some selected quotations on that point. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Teachings of Rishabhdev, 5th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 7. Even though one may be very learned and wise, he is mad if he does not understand that the endeavor for sense gratification is a useless waste of time. Being forgetful of his own interest, he tries to be happy in the material world, centering his interests around his home, which is based on sexual intercourse, and which brings him all kinds of material miseries. In this way, one is no better than a foolish animal. Purport. In the lowest stage of devotional life, one is not an unalloyed devotee. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmajanavritam. To be an unalloyed devotee, one must be freed from all material desires and untouched by fruitive activity and speculative knowledge. On the lower platform, one may sometimes be interested in philosophical speculation with a tinge of devotion. However, at that stage, one is still interested in sense gratification and is contaminated by the modes of material nature. The influence of Maya is so strong that even a person advanced in knowledge actually forgets that he is Krishna's eternal servant. Therefore, he remains satisfied in his householder life, which is centered around sexual intercourse. Conceding to a life of sex, he agrees to suffer all kinds of material miseries. Due to ignorance, one is thus bound by the chain of material laws. So my 557. So my point here is not to make word just disappeared from my vocabulary. Sorry about that. Accusation. Not to make an accusation that this is actually what's going on in householder life, even among the Krishna consciousness movement, that everybody's just in debt. No, hardly. But the danger is there that even if one is advanced in knowledge, he may forget Krishna. Therefore, these strict regulative principles are there. And beyond that, full engagement in devotional service, in the service of Krishna, and the Sankirtan movement, so that the heart becomes purified and one doesn't become a victim to this madness. The next verse, Pumsastriya Maitini Bhavametam, which we've discussed before, deals with a point that came up a couple times in class. Sometimes, even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple or to the few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi. But such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. The attachment to the family is the strongest illusion. In the Satya Sangita, it is stated, Brahmadya yagyavalkadya muchante stri sahayanaha bodhyante kechanai te sham visesham cha vidho viduhu. Sometimes it is found among exalted personalities like Lord Brahma that the wife and children are not a cause of bondage. On the contrary, the wife actually helps further spiritual life. Nonetheless, most people are bound by the knots of the marital relationship, and consequently they forget their relationship with Krishna. So if we don't want to forget Krishna, we have to follow in the footsteps of Lord Brahma. Purport. One should not be too much attached to family life, for it will spoil one's development of Krishna consciousness. I'm cutting it short here. This is text 36 of Canto 9, ninth canto, chapter 14. In this section, Urvashi, the apsara, angel, is giving advice to King. She says, rather strong things, don't mind. My dear king, you are a man, a hero. Don't be impatient and give up your life. Be sober and don't allow the senses to overcome you like foxes. Don't let the foxes eat you. In other words, you should not be controlled by your senses. Rather, you should know that the heart of a woman is like that of a fox. There's no use making friendship with women. Purport. Chanakya Pandit has advised, Vishvasho naiva kartavya strishu rajukuleshu cha. Never place your faith in a woman or a politician. Unless elevated to spiritual consciousness, everyone is conditioned and fallen, what to speak of women who are less intelligent than men. Women have been compared to shudras and vaishyas. Striyo vaishyas tata shudra. On the spiritual platform, however, when one is elevated to the platform of Krishna consciousness, whether one is a man, woman, shudra, or whatever, everyone is equal. Reading down further, Krishna conscious grihastas must be very careful of the sly fox woman. If the wife at home is obedient and follows her husband in Krishna consciousness, the home is welcome. Otherwise, one should give up one's home and go to the forest. One should go to the forest and take shelter of the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thank you. So these are strong warnings. Yes.
Can I ask the question now?
Yes.
Women as intelligent men?
Oh, yes.
I mean, okay, it's still in the movement, and it's still in the fields in the Bhagavad Gita as well, and in one of the... What do I do with it, you know, I can't speak on say, you know, your theory, your scriptures, women are less intelligent than men, you know. Forget it, I'm not joining our Krishna. You say that I'm less intelligent than you and the men. So that's the problem. I mean, how do I answer? How do I...
That is a fact. You can go on with your idea that women are equally intelligent. They're so intelligent that now they're free to do whatever they like and be exploited like anything.
That's one answer.
But
I expect great difficulties. I already have difficulties with this. Expect more.
Well, this is the statement of the sages, and we go by. You can go by your own method of getting knowledge. It seems to me, you know, this way or that way. But we take the Vedic knowledge as a fact.
Does it mean literally that women are less intelligent?
Yes.
It's very difficult. It's very, very, very difficult.
That's the difficulty of the present civilization, that people want to make friendship with women and mix freely and not know what's what. But this is knowledge. This is Vedic knowledge. The nature is different. There's also, it's not only Vedic knowledge, there's a professor at Penn, University of Pennsylvania, who's a woman, who's written a book which is presently a topic of conversation in intellectual circles. She's a professor there, in which she really graphically and quite bluntly and harshly disabuses the reader of the idea that men and women are just the same thing in different clothing. She's really made a strong case for it, for just a fundamental biological, emotional, temperamental, psychological, everything, you know, absolute set of differences, which everybody knew anyway, but somehow or other, people are busy trying to forget or trying to take advantage of some strange conception with the purpose of sense gratification at the end anyway. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada had very nice ways of dealing with these things sometimes. He wasn't just in the mood of making people feel bad, you know, rubbing someone's nose in it, as they say. In America, anyway. So one time he was talking about, he used to give evidence that according to some scientists, men have 64 ounces worth of brain substance and women have 32. And one of our ladies was there. So Prabhupada turned to her and said, but when they become Krishna conscious, then they grow the other 32. Or when he was giving the first Brahminical initiations, of course he didn't give sacred thread to the women. So then he quoted that in Vedic, and there's a saying in Bengal, I think, that a person who's not qualified as a Brahmin can't become qualified by going to the market and buying a sacred thread. And a person who is qualified doesn't need a sacred thread. So he said, so you're all more qualified, so I'm not giving you sacred thread. was there another question here?
I just want to complete with you. Just
maybe there's something in the way of book knowledge. There's that's possible. And it's not to say that people may not have specific abilities, or that there may not be, that there's no differentiation that specific women might not be smarter than specific men. but over in general, particularly because the tendency towards sense gratification is considered stronger. Sense gratification means attachment to the bodily concepts of life, material comforts, husband, children, and so on. Therefore, yes. Yes?
It's also written that in Kali Yuga, everyone is born like the Sutra. So.
Yeah, therefore, you can't say all that much about the men either. But still, they're men. Prabhupada seemed to hold that the distinction still applies, even in Kali Yuga. Otherwise, it becomes more Kali Yuga if we pretend there's no distinction. Yes? Mm-hmm.
It says because when I talk to ladies, I always try to make it make not so sharp. It says in the Bhagavad Gita that dream is the intelligence.
They're feminine qualities that are considered very nice. Intelligence in man. Krishna says, I'm the intelligence in man. Yeah, in Srimad Bhagavatam it said that the woman represents the, here in that allegory, represents the intelligence.
Hmm?
Yeah, that's also material intelligence. There are different ways of putting it nicely. One time Srila Prabhupada got a letter from one black devotee. And, of course, in different parts of the scriptures, it's indicated that to be born black is to take birth in a lower status. Several places where that's indicated. So, one black devotee wrote to Srila Prabhupada and said, I've heard this, I've heard that, I've heard this, I've heard that. Is it true? And Srila Prabhupada wrote back and said, in essence, what you want to know for? If you think that you're black, then you're in an illusory conception of life. Dehatmabuddhi kunapetri dhatuke saiva gokura. So even if it's true, what do you care? What's it to you? Because you're not this body. So this is the first point of spiritual realization, to understand that we're not this body. And one who understands that he or she is not this body is a liberated person. So if you want to make a case for, our embodiment is great because we're white, because we're black, because we're women, because we're men, because we're American, or because we're German, or we're Indian, or we're this, or we're that, then you're called Saiva Gokura. It means your intelligence is like that of a cow or an ass. So one has to come to the spiritual platform, Nistraigunya Bhavarjana, and understand, Aham Brahmasmi, I'm not this body. Then you'll be happy. Otherwise, if you want to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, it's not going to work. Everyone is better than man or woman. Everyone is spirit soul. We have to come to that platform. Mm-hmm.
And here it says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 34, among women, I think 14 times speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience.
Yeah, actually, it's revised among feminine qualities.
Yeah.
But in women also, if you find these qualities, it's very nice. Nice speech and determination, all these good things. So if in a woman these qualities are there, it's very nice. Or these are sometimes considered feminine qualities. So they're all nice qualities. There's something good everywhere. Everything good, anything engaged in Krishna's service is good. Men engaged in Krishna's service, they're very nice. Women engaged in Krishna's service, they're very nice. Everything engaged in Krishna's service is nice. And as soon as something is separated from Krishna, it's useless. Yes.
Mm-hmm. We have to, like you say, we have to define think what is intelligent, because in the material world, intelligent is to exploit the woman, and that's not intelligent. That woman is not intelligent. But in the platform, like you said, spiritual, if we want to look for Krishna, and the man is also looking for Krishna, then everybody is intelligent.
Yes. Therefore, when you come to Krishna consciousness, there's equality. Everybody's intelligent. You get the other 32 aspects. Okay, we go on? Good. Let's see. These are specific instructions by Srila Prabhupada to different people. Okay.
So the only really quality there is, that's the punchline.
Krishna consciousness is the real good quality, right? Now let's see what I've got here. This is a letter ...1972 to Harsharani. This Brahmacharya system is there. Let's see, is this... Do I have this letter? Longer version? I think I may do. Maybe do. Hold on. Yeah, this is a letter from Srila Prabhupada to a lady. You have mentioned that your father of your two children has left you and you're forced to live outside the temple. But I cannot understand what is the trouble. If you are getting government welfare help, then you can live separately. Take the children to the temple every day, bring them up in Krishna consciousness, and so on. Prabhupada says, this Brahmacharya system is there, but if one is not so strong, then he is allowed to marry. But he must expect that the after effects will always be troublesome. Everywhere I see people, man and wife with family, and all of them suffer. But still, they go on producing more. Sex means trouble. Therefore, one should become dhira and don't be attracted by this sex life. Henceforward, anyone proposing to marry must produce some outside income and live outside the temple. They must know this in advance and be prepared to carry such burden. Let them be married, but at their own risk. I cannot sanction any more. My Guru Maharaj never allowed. But when I came to your country, it was a special circumstance, so I gave concession. But I am not so much inclined anymore. So I shall not sanction, but they may marry on their own risk of knowing that such arrangement is always troublesome. Yes.
What does it mean, my Guru Maharaj never allowed?
As far as I understand, people in Gaudiya Math, there were no couples living. There were no householders living. In the still, if you go to Gaudiya Math, you won't find householders in the ashram. The brahmacharis and sannyasis are living in the ashram, and some householders may be there are householders who are doing their business outside, and they come to the temple. They may support. They may take part. But the actual business of the preaching and the ashram and the whole thing, temple, is conducted by the brahmacharis and sannyasis. There's no scope for women and there's no scope for couples. They just, though they're living outside. But Srila Prabhupada made an adjustment. He said, so many women are coming, how can we turn them away? So he tried to make nice arrangements. But here he's indicating that man and woman combination is always troublesome. He said so at your own risk. Yes.
In the early days, Prabhupada was very much encouraging his household and friends to go out and
preach.
Start preaching Sankirtan. And they were very successful. Prabhupada very much praised them and encouraged them. I'm just wondering why we don't see more of that today. There are so many householders in America who go to Des Moines, Iowa, or somewhere.
Every time I get the opportunity, I encourage them. I've seen that we have some very nice householder couples who've done just exactly that. They open a center someplace in some college town or some town where there's no preaching, and they start holding classes, they start inviting people to come, they cook prasadam and invite people to take Krishna prasadam and enjoy kirtan. And maybe they don't get a huge result, but they get some result, and where there was nothing before. Or maybe they get a very nice big result. But anyway, one result is they become very happy, very much enlivened, preaching Krishna consciousness, and the local people get the benefit. So, and I feel very sorry sometimes to see our householders packed up in a big community where they have no engagement. They have, you know, everyone thinks, well, deity worship, there's already pujaris doing the deity worship. And cooking, well, the cooks are already, cooking is taken care of. Anything else that needs to be done, somebody's already doing it. So I don't really have any engagement. Temple can't pay for me. You know, they already have cooks, they can't pay for me to be the cook. They have pujaris, they can't pay for me to be the pujari. So I have all my household expenses, apartment, food, everything. So I have to go out and work very hard. And I'm fully engaged, and I hardly get any temple, any time for the preaching or Krishna Conscious Association and activities. Or just the nature of the community somehow is that the people, so many people unengaged, then they spend their time together in, you know, social activities without much strong spiritual content. And their life deteriorates, their spiritual life deteriorates. So I encourage such householders, if they don't have strong engagement, go. Get out. You know, don't stay in a big community with 700 householders all packed up together. Go out to some place where there's no one, one couple or two couples, and do the same thing. Earn your money, rent an apartment or a house. And the difference is that with that same apartment that was just your nest in that big devotee community, now it becomes an outpost for the Sankirtan movement. Preachers can come and visit, and more than that, more important, you can preach. You become the preachers. You suddenly have a big role in the Sankirtan movement just by earning money and paying your rent, and the same food that you were cooking before at home, now you just cook twice as much, five times as much, same cooking business, and distribute, invite some, even if you don't hold a big program, every night, invite some friend, different friend, come, take prasadam, hear something about Krishna. And your life becomes nice. And you were packed up in some big expensive city, but now go someplace else, and your rent is caught in half. Because now you're in some less, you know, packed up, high rent area. You can be anywhere. So choose someplace where your rent is low, where you can meet your expenditures easily, and where there's nobody preaching. And do something wonderful. Some are doing it, not in large numbers, but such an opportunity is there. Or those who are already living out someplace. Just Charidakotari Kama Krishna Pradesh, take the advantage and preach. We have some very nice householders in America that Krishna Smaranam is there, Ramrangam is there. They're in some outpost because of their job, you know, they're in Augusta, Georgia, or they're in some place. So they make their home like a temple, and they invite people to come. They hold regular programs. It becomes nice. Everybody can do this. Yes.
And Maharaj, if you have children, would you like to see a place there, like in Aris, for instance, like a big school here?
Well, you have to see, you know. We have one householder couple. They've been in some remote place, and they've been personally teaching their daughter not sending her to the public school, training her themselves. And she's a very nice devotee. Very nice devotee. And sometimes we see that even in the big devotee community, the children are sent to the public school, or they associate with so much nonsense in the city that they're spoiled. So you may find that it's better going to some other place. You have to adjust. You have to see what, you know, what your needs are, what the needs of your family are. But if you can meet those needs and at the same time spread Krishna consciousness and preach, well, then it's wonderful.
But just say, it might even sound cold-hearted, but it's not at all. The Prabhupada also said that one reason for Gurukula, so the parents are freed up to serve Krishna.
That's the other side. Actually, school doesn't mean that you're packed up there, you know, you pack up the little kid's lunchbox every day and send them around the corner to the Gurukul. That's not actually Gurukul. Gurukul means Brahmacharya Gurukule Vasantanta Gururhitam. The child is sent, even if he's a king's son, he's sent to the place where the guru is, and he's trained up. Because the parents will naturally be indulgent. So, at the age of 5, the child is sent to the place of the guru, and he's trained in spiritual culture, so that his life becomes very nice. That's actually the system. And there's so many other things that are being done now, they may or may not be very good. That is another question. But that's a fact. If your child is in the Gurukul, then the child is getting nice education, supposed to be getting nicely trained up, and your life is free.
So then, we also know in one sense this concept of maintaining wife and children is an illusory one. Like Sri Prabhupada explains, it's like the pig who gives the cubs is also maintaining his family. Mm-hmm. So what's the special thing? So we also know that the most important thing is to absorb in Krishna. But if you have to go out and make some money, then at least I don't see how I absorb myself in Krishna so much. So then, from a purely logical point of view, you say, well, I'm not going to do that because the most important part of my life is to fix myself.
That's very good.
But then you might be said, well, you're not very responsible towards your wife and children. Because
well, that's the problem. For those who want the luxury of not having to go and work, don't get into householder life. That's if it's too late, then live with it. One who's got that responsibility, he can't say, oh, I don't like it. Oh, you know, you want, it's like the chicken without the goose that laid the golden eggs. They like the side with the gold and they didn't like the side that eats. No, you have to, accepting householder life means you have to accept the whole business. Not just the fun, as it were, you know, the happiness of family comforts, but the responsibility. That's a very heavy responsibility. One who doesn't want that responsibility or can't discharge that responsibility should stay away from householder life. And one who's entered that householder life, he has to perform his prescribed duty. Karmanye vadikaraste. One has to do it. Must do it. Krishna didn't say to Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, I know fighting is really terrible. You just go off and meditate. No. There was a question?
I just wanted to go back to Gurukul. The problem is today that many Gurukuls, well, as can they say, our experience is that we couldn't cope with the children, and therefore we can't take the children anymore without the parents.
Therefore I say that householder life is very difficult.
But you said the original idea of the Gurukul.
That is the idea. Something is there, Mayapur Gurukul is there, Vrindavan Gurukul is there. But it's difficult, you know, just like, you know, what your parents moved to a little town in New Jersey or some place. What were they looking for? good job for your father, good school for the kids, nice place to live. So that's what all householders want, Krishna conscious, not Krishna conscious. You know, some place where the father can earn money and not be too much entangled, some place where the kids can go to school and get, you know, a nice gurukul, nice education, some place where it's pleasant to live and it's not, you know, hellish Kali Yuga. So everybody's looking for that. But it's difficult. This is the material world. Things don't just always fall into our laps as we'd like them. You know, you want to find a good school, but the work is here and the school is there, and you can't. If there's school, there's not work. If there's work, there's not school. The rent is low over here, but there are no jobs. The jobs are over here, but the rent is sky high. There's jobs are good and rent is low, but there's no school. These are the problems of householder life. Okay, moving on. This is a nice letter. All of Prabhupada's letters are nice, but this is kind of a charming letter. This is written to a Mr. Loy in 1972. I don't know who Mr. Loy is, but from the context, it becomes clear. I can very much understand your concern. After all, she is your beloved daughter, and you have sacrificed everything just to bring her to the point of proper education, training, and so many things are there between you. But what can I say? In your country, the girls are independent, and from very young age, they are accustomed to mix with young boys, so naturally there will be attraction, sex desire, and marriage. Actually, this whole material world is running on this attraction between man and woman. It is described in Srimad Bhagavatam that once the boy and girl unite intimately, the hard knot is formed, and the girl is thinking, oh, without him, I am lost. And the boy is thinking, oh, without her, I am lost. That is Maya's arrangement for keeping us bound up tightly in the material atmosphere. If wife is there, then some money must be coming. That means work, land, or factory, children, home, friends, community, nation. Like that, there is increasing complication of illusion of thinking, this is mine, that is mine. But they do not know that one day death will kick them out mercilessly, and neither home, nor wife, nor children, nothing can prevent that. All along he is thinking these things are like soldiers of security to safeguard his happy life. But they are described as fallible soldiers because they will not help us at all. When the moment of death is there, no one may protect us, and if we are not prepared for that moment by practicing Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, then we shall be struck with fear, and we shall not know where we are going after and what kind of body we may be forced by nature to take. But this kind of householder life of Griha Maid consciousness does not apply to our marriages in Krishna consciousness movement. No. Because the sex urge is so strong in young persons, and because they are used to mixing freely with one another, I encourage my students to get themselves married. But our point is not that hard knot as above mentioned, above described. It is simply a relationship of mutually helping each other, man and wife, to make advancement in spiritual life. Nothing more. We are not after home, money, fame, like that. But that does not mean that he shall not support her nicely. No. It is the duty of husband to protect wife in every way from the onslaught of material nature, and he must act always as her spiritual guide by being perfect example of devotee. Women are not so quick to learn, and they are weak by nature, so they should be protected in this way. In our Vedic science of living, it is enjoined that the society should be organized in such a way to protect women, children, old people, and cows, because factually, all of them are innocent. So children have parents, elderly persons must have grown-up children to protect them, and woman must have husband. and it is recommended they should be married at very early age. Then the wife will always remain always chaste and devoted to her husband. At such young age, from the first night onwards, she can never for a moment forget him, being still child and unspoiled. Therefore she becomes the perfect chaste wife, and in those times the wife was so much devoted to her husband that she would voluntarily die in the fire of his cremation, unable to live without him. Myself, I was very young when I got married, and my wife was 11 years only. But there is no question of separation in our marriage belief. Neither your daughter will ever be separated from that boy. That is their vow. Rather, it is when people are a little grown up, when they have got little independence and their own ways of doing things, then if they marry, there is often difficulty to adjust, just as it is more difficult to bend the bamboo when it is yellow. I can assure you that you may have nothing to fear that your daughter has married such a nice boy. Mahonam janmanamante gyanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. Krishna assures us that after many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. In this light, try to view these children. They have realized that life together spent in the pursuit of God is real knowledge, and that they have not done lightly by any means. No, actually they must be considered as great souls, the most exalted persons among all persons. Our married couples are rendering the greatest service to humanity, their countrymen, and to their parents. Of that, kindly be assured by me. Do not worry for anything in this connection. You are a great gentleman, otherwise you could not have fostered such intelligent daughter. And gentlemen are known to be broad-minded. So therefore I appeal to you as their spiritual father to encourage them in every respect.
That you have brahmacharis and brahmacharis, then you have grihasthas, vanaprastha sannyasa, then you spoke also about grihastha brahmacharis, people who just want to devote their life to, but then in order to fix the minds, to have a partner, and then they preach together.
So Prabhupada's indicating that here. That it's not for sense gratification, but for serving Krishna. Not for home, comfort, fame, but just to advance in Krishna consciousness.
Another letter.
Prabhupada knew how to deal so nicely with everyone. A perfect psychologist also. This is a letter. 1972. Regarding your question about thinking about sex, is that also one form of illicit sex or against our four principles? Yes, even thinking sex is the same as illicit sex, but one who is not advanced cannot avoid it. But that does not disturb our regular procedure. we should strongly follow all the regulations and principles and chant, and these thoughts will come and go away. Thinking will come. Even great saintly persons like Lord Shiva are not free of thoughts that come, so what to speak of you? So we must say that such thinking is no offense because you are accustomed to this habit. But beyond thinking are feeling and willing. So even thoughts of sex connection may come. That is difficult even for saintly persons to avoid. Still, in the further stages of feeling and willing, we can easily conquer over this sex urge. Willing should be avoided and acting stopped, or else there is offense of breaking this basic prohibition of illicit sex life. Because thinking comes, I shall give it practical shape. That is nonsense. But because it is an old habit, we are unable to check it unless we can understand the nature of feeling, willing, and then action, and how by proper use of intelligence we can prevent thoughts which must come from maturing into actions. That is the practical application of Krishna consciousness regulative principles. Even Lord Chaitanya himself said that sometimes when I see a wooden form of a woman, my mind becomes agitated. But that does not mean that we should give it practical shape. That is intelligence. One must be convinced that sex life, without exception, means trouble. Therefore, he is able to stop it at the thinking stage by not allowing it to be felt, much less willed and acted. I am so much disgusted by this troublesome business of marriage, because nearly every day I receive some complaint from husband or wife, and practically this is not my business as sannyasi, to be marriage counselor. So henceforward I am not sanctioning any more marriages, and those who want to marry must know in advance and be prepared to make outside income to support wife and home separately from the temple, and in the temple husband and wife shall live separately. That must be, or what is the meaning of spiritual society like ours? I made a concession, but how can I encourage something which has proven to be so much trouble? Actually, the purpose of our life is to please Krishna. That is the business of the older children, to serve the father. So there's test for knowing if I am pleasing Krishna, if he reveals himself to me. If I see Krishna, then I know I am pleasing Krishna. And another test is, if my spiritual master is pleased by my service, then I know that I am pleasing Krishna. It is very simple, because if I am following the prescribed regulative principles of my spiritual master, then without doubt I am pleasing him. So in this way, if you think it over, you will understand the answers to all your questions. Any questions? Just think it over, you'll get all the answers. Another letter. This letter is to a devotee who is staying in India. Householder devotee. And it's 1972. This devotee apparently was feeling difficulty. Prabhupada mentions that there's some sickness and you're feeling disappointed. This happens with devotees from your country. They come to India and then they have a hard time. Then he says, but we need, Prabhupada essentially says, we need men. We have a lot of projects here. We have a lot of work. So we need some devotees. But you're not adjusted to this way of life here, so you've lost your enthusiasm due to irregular habits. Let's see. But if one's determined to preach, then despite all unfavorable circumstances, for the time being, you are having little difficulty. So I think you will require the regulated household life as you are suggesting. House and everything regular. But unless the basic determination to become successful in Krishna consciousness is there, any type of occupation or any place where you are serving Krishna will similarly become a source of restlessness and troubling of your mind. Therefore, My advice to you is simply this, that you search out in yourself whether that basic determination and faith in our Krishna consciousness program is strong in you, and whether if by going here or going there or doing this or doing that, this determination and faith will be enhanced. Sometimes Krishna may put us into some difficulty just to purify us and force us to advance in Krishna consciousness. The devotee should always see his difficulty in this light, that Krishna is so kind upon me for creating this condition of struggling. Thus he is relieving me of so many billions of lifetimes of sinful reactions by this very insignificant and temporary condition of suffering something. Or if our attachment for Krishna is not yet developed and there is still attraction for the ordinary life of householder life, together with friends, family, children, working, like that, that is all right. By that process, if one contributes something of his income to the preaching work and attends himself with family the temple for the class and kirtan, gradually he will get some enthusiasm and develop his attachment for Krishna. But that is the slow and troublesome way. And I know that you are so intelligent, boy, along with your good wife, Saradhya, so you may do as you like, but it would please me very much if you will dedicate yourself and your wife completely to the preaching work. That is important. Running on of factories, family, these are ordinary businesses, and anyone may do them, any ordinary man. But you are not ordinary men, that I know. My best advice to you is that you do not bother yourself by so many speculative thoughts and thus only aggravate the situation further. But if you are unhealthy with liver infection, that is another thing. First of all, get back your health. For that, living in Europe or America may be better for you. That I do not know. But in any case, remember always that you have now got this golden opportunity of human form of life. And it is not by accident that you have met your spiritual master and have become involved in Krishna's work. Therefore, remember these things and try to utilize your best intelligence and energy to take advantage of the situation, and without any further delay, take yourself to the perfectional platform of your life. The activity most recommended by Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for taking oneself to the perfectional stage in this age of Kali Yuga is this Sankirtan, or preaching mission. So if you will be able to form yourself into the first-class preacher, that will be best for you and for others also. Your wife may also assist you in your important activities of spreading Krishna consciousness. She is a very nice painter and artist, and she is very sincere and serious also. So you may together utilize your spot life as preachers of Krishna consciousness. That will be better. That will be the better occupation. There is no harm for having children. That is no impediment for preaching endeavor. But too much attachment for children, home, and work will spoil your opportunity to get very quickly the mature benefit of Krishna consciousness or self-realization. These are all instructions from Srila Prabhupada. Let's see if I have one more, maybe. Depends what the devotees are. If the devotees are men, the advice is don't marry. If the devotees are women, the advice is marry early.
I heard that being three Canadian devotees, and the boys were 18 and the girls were like 16 in their own marriage, and all the boys ran away, and all the girls, their babies, and they're all gone.
Well, I can't say. Again, just as Prabhupada says, I'm not a marriage counselor, so I'm also not a marriage counselor. But generally, the boys should be old enough to be very responsible men. In my experience, an 18-year-old European or American boy is a kid. An Indian 18-year-old boy is another thing. He's already been working for 10 years. Right? 18-year-old Indian boy, he's already been, you know, like a wage earner. He's already been making a living for the past 10 years. And even then, it may not be that he's married at 18 and then immediately they set up shop, you know. Just like Prabhupada was married at 11, I don't know that it immediately means that he, you know, is living together with his wife at 11. Prabhupada explains in another letter, gradually they brought together. But, so anyway, so that's just a personal observation that in my experience and in my observation, 18-year-old Americans and European boys are not always so responsible. Maybe. So individual consideration has to be there, therefore senior devotees are there, spiritual master may be there.
For the girls, is all this good? And
yes. Young is good.
Young is good.
Young is good. Nice.
This question probably could be answered in a few weeks of talk, but anyway, it seems that so much of what we're talking about is basically about instituting Vedic culture.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we also know that when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he sometimes had to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
So, can you give any, is there any guidelines that you could come up with in how much Prabhupada wanted us to adjust, or how much he actually wanted to bring, you know, us as a society up to the Vedic standard, no matter where we all come from?
Well, he very much wanted us to come to a nice standard of Vedic life. He was always bringing us up, you know, one thing after another, introducing and trying to bring it to the right standard. Even the scholars have noted this about Prabhupada, that so many other gurus and swamis, they came to America, and from the very beginning, their whole program was compromise, had every opportunity to compromise. But Srila Prabhupada had the opposite. He used to say that I'm not going to come down to their standard, I want to bring them to our standard. That was his program. So I saw he was always trying to do that. But when he saw that in some circumstance it was just not adjustable or it was not practical, then he would adjust. The Gopi Chandan was not available in America for tilak, so we were using fuller's earth, you know, some clay, local stuff. So many things were not, you know, paraphernalia was not available, so Prabhupada was adjusting. Or the deity worship in the beginning was so, you know, simple, just no big mantras and tantras and Krishna Kshetra's deity worship book. It's just, put the deity to sleep, you say, my dear Krishna, please take rest. Wake the deity up, my dear Krishna, please wake up. That was the mantra. And everything was like that. Just, you know, as far as possible, pick up the idea, and then Prabhupada brought it to the standard gradually. Nice, gorgeous thrones for the deities, everything punctual, Mangal Arati, everything. Otherwise, first devotees, they get up at 6, 7, and Prabhupada instituted one thing after another. He expected. And he also said, that I want all of my students to go to India and become cultured. Therefore, we're visiting India. In India, you get culture. He said, all of my students should spend some time in India.
So we have our work cut out for this. We have to, bring all the devotees that are already devotees up to that standard, and as we're preaching in the West, so many people will come and train them all up.
Yeah, that's good. That's our program. Just like in schools, the kids are uneducated. They go in one end out uneducated, and they come out the other end educated. Or they go in, school is meant for acculturization. You know, when you go into school, you're a happy-go-lucky, this and that. When you come out the end, you're ready to go to work for IBM. Because they've acclimatized you to the certain consciousness and a certain standard of life. So, but we're going in the opposite direction. Prabhupada said, when they come out of our Gurukul, they'll be unfit for any employment. They'll be unfit for employment. Because being employed is the business of a Shudra. It means they'll be fit for serving Krishna. That's all. Independent intelligence. Pardon me? You want to be a Shudra, be a Shudra. What can be said? They'll be unfit. They'll be misfits in this material world. So many people were brought up to be, you know, good little business executives. They didn't want to do it. So they learned how to be hippies. They learned how to be, you know, some nonsense. Or they learned how to be Hare Krishnas. You know? So if you're brought up to be a Hare Krishna, you want to be some nonsense, you'll find a way. Or you want to be a big businessman instead of a devotee, you'll find a way. But at least we give our best effort to give you the opportunity not to spoil your human form of life. Not that we think, well, there's a possibility in the future he'll want to be a materialist, so I have to prepare him for that kind of future. Yes? Being a devotee and being what?
And maintaining a business. If you do the business to raise money to give to the temple, for example, because according to your explanation, if all the people at the seven became devotees, where did the blessing come from that you maintain the temple?
That's not a... What happens if all the people become devotees and there's no one to maintain the temple? So we should train some people up to make money and do business. First thing is, there's no such danger. You know, one time Satsrup Maharaj was on some radio show and someone asked what would happen if all the people came to your temple, you know, for your feast, what would you do? And I think at that time Satsrup Maharaj didn't have a ready answer. He wrote to Prabhupada and asked, you know, how should I answer such a question? Prabhupada said, first thing is that they don't come. Let them come, we'll feed them. But they're not coming. That's the problem. Otherwise, hundreds of thousands of men can come. Krishna is there, we're ready to feed them. But they're not coming. Let them come. So this is the problem, that people don't become devotees. They're not agreeing, let us all, you know, let the whole world become. We want them, but they're not agreeing. So it appears under the circumstances that there's no present danger that the whole world will become devotees. There's always somebody who's determined, let me stick it out in this material world. And even among devotees, there's always someone determined, let me do business and make money and come to the temple now and then. Someone will always, someone's at this level, someone's at that level. But at least, let there be some serious, determined people who have no other business. Let me serve Krishna. Prabhupada said to this other devotee, all right, you know, if you want to do that, you can do it, working and so on. He said, but that's an ordinary man's business. You can do it and gradually develop your Krishna consciousness. He said, but why not take the advantage? Just focus on Krishna consciousness. Money will always be there. Money will always be there. There's no shortage. We're not dependent on donations. We're dependent on Krishna. If all the donors disappeared from the face of the earth, Krishna would send some other one.